Sassy Jack Stitchery is happy to be a sponsor of Fiber Talk. We so appreciate all the heart that Gary and team put into their show, and we always look forward to each episode. Thank you, Fiber Talk, for all you do for our needlework world. Sassy Jack's is a vibrant needlework shop located in the mountains of western North Carolina, just north of Asheville. We're in the process of moving our shop to its forever home in a historic Folk Victorian on the National Listing of Historic Places, just 3 miles down the road from our current location. While we're moving, you can find us in all our normal online haunts, our website at sassyjackstitchery.com, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. We can't wait to open our doors and welcome you into our new old home. It was always the plan to be in this beautiful old house, and we've invested a huge chunk of our hearts into its renovation. Every renovated board, every push-button light switch, every old porch swing has lovingly, mostly, been placed there with our own hands. It has a wonderful, warm, welcoming feel about the place already, and your stitchy joy and laughter with friends will really make it home for Sassy Jack's. So look for us online for the next few months, as we'll be filling online and phone orders as per usual, and we'll be looking forward to the spring at the Baird House in Asheville, North Carolina. When the time comes, we'll leave the light on for you, just like your mom did when you were a kid, so you'll know it's time to come home. Now on to the show.
Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr, and you're listening to Fiber Talk, the twice-weekly podcast for needlework artists. And with us this week, Trish Burr. Welcome, Trish.
Hi, Gary.
Get that drink in.
How did you know?
Because I could hear the...
It's not hard stuff. It's ginger ale. But still, okay. It's very hot here.
Yeah, you get the summer right now. I'm jealous, yeah.
We're in summer. It's very hot. About 32 degrees, so...
Ooh, that's healthy.
I've got a drink. Yeah. I've got a drink with ice, and my family's cooking supper, and I'm ready to chat.
I looked the last time that we talked, October 28, 2018. I did not realize it had been that long. Wow.
Yes.
Every time I look back at those, I realize how long I've been doing this podcast.
You have, and you interview a lot of people too, so I'm sure.
Yep. No, awesome. I did not. I thought it'd just been like a year or so, and no, it's been a long time. So, yeah, good to catch up. I recall when we talked, you had just decided to cut back on a lot of your business activities to try and find yourself some time to do things that you wanted to do and to seek out new ground. Were you able to do that? Did that pay off for you?
Still trying to do that.
Excellent. Well done. Bravo.
I guess I have managed to achieve a few things, but you know, it's very hard to, it is very hard to cut back, isn't it? And
yes.
You know, it's hard to keep up with the pressures of creating a brand and the admin and the shipping and the social media. At the same time as remaining creative. So, you know, and I love interacting with my customers and my followers, but sometimes it feels as though we're trying to portray one image to the world while at the same time remain true to ourselves. I don't know. Do you feel that? Does everyone else feel that? I hope they do.
Yeah, I get that sense in a lot of people I talk to. I mean, it's the great dilemma. You build it up and you get a business and, like you said, a brand and a business build up so that you're cranking out product and you have customers that count on you. And the creativity keeps getting shoved to the back. It's something you're going to do tomorrow or you'll do on the weekend. And then you wake up one day and go, wait a minute, that part has disappeared. I need to recapture it. And when you said that back then, I thought, yeah, I don't blame you. I'd want to just sit back and have some hours to just let my mind create. And because you had mentioned about trying some things that you weren't sure were going to sell or that people would be interested in and trying to find a new level of maybe difficulty or challenge. And I've just wondered how that went. So, okay.
Well, yes, I have done a few things. And, you know, as I You're very good at remembering all this stuff, actually. You're reminding me of things. It's, you know, what I really like doing is not necessarily what the customer likes. And also, people tend to label you as Trish does flowers, Trish does birds.
Right.
And you have people that follow you. So some people do birds and they, I don't know, I suppose they frame them and put them on their wall and they want more birds. And some people just like flowers. And I've often done, what are those things that you do? Surveys.
Mm-hmm.
And it always comes back with the flowers and the birds. So, you know, I love to do them, but I also want to do something crazy. And I love looking at what other people are doing on Pinterest and Instagram. And I think, oh, wonder if you could do that in embroidery, like sketching, for example. You know, could you recreate a sketch?
Mm-hmm.
But what I really love is naive painting. And so I have spent many months teaching myself to paint digitally.
Okay.
Okay. And create my own naive paintings. So I've done a series of my part of the world, so Cape Town scenes. And my biggest problem is that they have a color background. So you basically, you've got mountains and sky and a house and so on. And you don't fill in the whole embroidery. You leave the background, you leave the mountains, you leave the sky, and you just fill in all the nice bits. They've turned out really well, but I've got a problem with how to print the color onto fabric. So that's work in progress. I'm just trying to find different ways.
Yeah, that was the first thing that popped into my head is, can you get the quality of printed color that you need when you put down that rich embroidery thread and make it work?
Yeah, yeah. You need to have, obviously, the sky and the mountains need to look quite good in color. So I've got a sublimation printer. I don't know if I had that when I last spoke to you, but this is a new thing in my life and I love it. So it prints black and white outlines onto linen or cotton, no problem.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't print color. It only prints color on polyester, which everyone knows in that world. So the problem is trying to get color onto linen.
Mm-hmm.
So once I find a way to do that, I'll release them. And I have no idea what people will think. I have put a few out on the internet just to see.
Right.
I'm not sure of the response, actually.
Yeah.
But, you know, you try. You try different things and you see.
Well, it's the great dilemma. And I equate this to, you hear comments in interviews from musicians, rock stars and others, in that they'll put out a couple of songs that make them a lot of money, and it's not always what they want to do. And you hear it frequently where they're torn by, do I do more things that make me money because that's what people want to hear? I want to do this kind of music over here. The actor Denzel Washington, one time in an interview, who does a lot of action movies and stuff, and he commented, he'd done some serious one, a play, which is a magnificent movie from a black playwright that he was really proud of and should be, because it's just superb. But his comment in this interview was, basically, I do these action things to make the money so that I can do the films I really want to do. And
that's just how I feel, actually. Well, not exactly, but I'm so interested to hear that, because it is I think I heard Hazel saying you have to pay the bills, you know, so there's a certain amount that you have to do, and you do know what sells and what doesn't sell. But at the same time, there's two things. You can't be truly satisfied unless you creating or using your innate creative source.
Right.
And secondly, it's your job or it's your duty to lead your followers higher and higher. You don't want to just leave them where they are.
Right.
You know, they start off with you, they learn needle painting or white work or whatever, and I always feel a sense of like I need to keep moving them forward too and challenging them with new ideas. Mm-hmm. So it's that fine balance of trying to do both.
Yeah, and it's,
maybe it's, I won't do it in this lifetime, but you know, I tried.
Yeah. Right. Well, and it can come off to some people wrong in that you're tired of birds and flowers and you don't want to do them anymore, but they make money, so you grind them out and blah blah blah, which is not the case either. You know, you're just kind of torn, and yeah, I'm with you 100%. You want to move the program forward and put out new challenges for people, appreciating that there are a lot of people who just enjoy stitching the birds, and for them, it's their first time out with needle painting, and you know, there's a necessity there too.
It's a difficult one, but you know, also it's very hard to stitch something if you don't really enjoy it, and it'll show in the stitching. So it has to be something that I love.
Yes.
And I would never put a pattern out there unless I loved it. Just thinking of that, my youngest daughter once said to me, if you're not sure how something looks when you're stitching it, take a photo. And when you look at it on your camera, it looks so different. And it just jumps out at you immediately. You'll look at it and think, oh, no, you know, that's not doing it.
Right.
So it's quite a good tip.
Yeah, hard to argue with a photo, yeah.
Yes, it just tells all the truth. It tells the truth.
Yeah, so true, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you'll always be known for your birds and flowers because, yeah.
Thanks.
That's part of it. Nothing wrong with that. That's a good thing. That's a good thing.
No. And birds are lovely to stitch, but, you know, what I find is a lot of birds are just sitting on a branch. There's no story to it. There's no composition. Mm-hmm. So you have to somehow create that composition. So sometimes I'll take, a vintage floral botanical thing, and I'll superimpose a bird in that to try and create some sort of, I think it's got to have a bit of a story. You don't want to just be stitching something that's just dead, you know, that's just sitting on a branch.
Yeah, yeah.
It could be a stuffed bird, you know. But
yep.
So that is my problem with birds, is it's quite limited, whereas flowers is obviously, you could go on ad infinitum, you know, they're just beautiful, and you compose them in so many different ways. Anyway.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. When I used to do an awful lot of photography, and flowers were where I ended up, flower botanical things, because
did you?
Yeah, mm-hmm. and you know, up close macro stuff, and a lot of what I did wasn't the flower, it was the parts of the flower.
Yes.
And because to me, that's where the lines and shapes and textures were at.
Yes.
And I didn't
yes.
really care about the full bloom. It really didn't matter much to me. But you take those pictures because they're there. But to get in close and get just a few petals and, you know, and the stamens and just little bits and pieces and get in on that color that's there, that subtle changes of color, to me, that's where the real interest was.
I totally agree. And it's, I call it flower samplers, or you could call it flower studies. There's so much. In fact, I'm working on those at the moment. I can't say too much.
Oh.
But I'm working on a lot of those. So this is, you know, and I'm right with you. I understand what you're saying.
To come then. Okay, good. We'll look for that. Yeah. I really liked the black and white, or the monochrome needle painting that you did. I hope there's going to be more of that. That's black and white appeals to me anyway, because it says something, and it's either right or it doesn't work. And because you can't hide behind color there, because it's not there. But yeah, those were really effective and fun to do, or just kind of a one-off thing?
No, they are such fun to do. And I'm also with you on this. I love black and white sketches. In fact, I'm not great at painting, but I can do pencil. So that was another idea. Two reasons behind it. We were suffering from a worldwide shortage of thread last year. So it was a bit out of necessity, because I thought, well, there's only, what, six shades of gray. Well, you could probably find more, but, you know, there's not many shades of gray. And most people will be able to find shades of gray. And also because I just had a yen to create pencil drawings. It was my little challenge. I wanted to see if I could do it. And you know what, you can. And you have to find the right sort of subject, and there has to be a lot of contrast in the grays. And I'm actually looking for a bird at the moment, you know, birds.
Yeah,
trying
those.
To find the right bird. I found such a beautiful one on DeviantArt. It is stunning, and it's just what I want, and I cannot get hold of the artist. You know, he hasn't been on DeviantArt since 2017, so he could have passed on. He could be no longer have the account. But it's the most frustrating thing. This beautiful bird sitting there, I want to stitch it, and I can't. But anyway, we'll keep looking. We'll find a good photo. But I definitely am going to do more of those, yes.
Well, good.
Definitely. It's going to be a collection. It's going to be a full collection at some stage.
Excellent. So you work off of, you'll sit down and do a pencil drawing. Do you refine that drawing, or do you just rough it in and then let the stitching take care of the detail?
I basically, if I get permission from an artist, I will completely redraw it, but not by hand. I do everything on CorelDRAW. So okay. I'll do an outline, and then I'll change it to make it more suitable for embroidery. You know, I might enlarge the eye slightly. It's very difficult to do a small eye. And then I'll have a couple of different reference shots to work with. So I'll make up a little mood board, and I'll keep that with me while I'm stitching. And so it will resemble the original, but I always say to the artist, it won't look the same. They need to understand that. It's not a copy.
Right.
But hopefully, you know, the thread and everything can actually enhance the original image.
Yeah.
And normally they're very happy. But then sometimes I'll just create something from scratch. But I will use reference photos. But I'll just make it my own.
Yeah.
It just depends. It depends. Obviously, if you get a beautiful, if you get permission to use a beautiful painting, you're not going to completely, you know, annihilate it. You want it to be as close to the original, you know, it's there. The artist's done the work.
Can I use your painting? Sure. Okay, I really don't like it. I'm going to change it.
Yeah,
but
I'm just
thanks for
take
letting
everything
me.
Out and change it. Yeah.
Appreciate the permission anyway.
It's a difficult one. A lot of artists are not keen. They don't want to see their work in another medium, which surprises me, but perhaps they think that I won't do it justice. But anyway, and there's those that are.
That's interesting, because I was going to ask you if they're generally amenable to you using their stuff. So you run into some resistance then. That's interesting.
Definitely. Some people are very keen, you know, they're the broad-minded ones.
Yeah.
Think, oh, wow, yes, I'd like to see my work in another medium. But others just, oh, no, thank you. That's not how I want to be seen, you know.
Well, that's interesting.
Mm.
Because, yeah, I'd say, yeah, do it. Let's see what see how it comes out. Mm. That'd be fun. Yeah.
Yeah. For the new book I'm working on, and I'm not allowed to say too much, but I've got permission for some beautiful artwork. That's all I can say. Oh, The artists have been so accommodating. I think also they're quite keen to be associated with Q, you know, the prestige of it. So that has helped, because they've definitely been more amenable than in the past. But it's so nice to have a warehouse full of ideas that you can just pick out what you want and use. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that Q book, I mean, I bought the thing, and wow.
The thing? What's
yeah,
the thing?
The thing. The thing.
The thing.
That didn't come out right. Oh, well. No, I wow. I mean, yeah. The presentation alone. So, yeah, so you think you're buying this normal bound hard-covered book, but the hardcover part is this has a sleeve for the iron-on transfers, and then the actual book with the designs and all the information is a soft-covered book that is in the other sleeve, and it's a tremendous presentation. The Search Press people really did it up. I mean, the production on this has got to be huge in terms of time and cost. But what I like about it is it makes a very functional package for something that you're going to actually use to stitch from.
Yeah, thanks, Gary. I must admit, I was also very pleasantly surprised. I mean, they did try and explain how it would all work, but you never know until you see it.
Yeah.
And as you probably heard the story about how it got delayed during the COVID lockdown last year. It was supposed to be released early, and anyway, everything shut down, and so I didn't get a copy. And then when the copies came out, they couldn't get a copy to South Africa because all the ports had closed. So my daughter, I got two copies sent to my daughters in London, and they did a Zoom call with me and unveiled this book.
Oh, jeez.
And said, "Now we're taking it out the packet, and here it is." And I was just sitting there with tears rolling down my face. And they showed me each page. It was very sad. I actually only got to see my copy 3 or 4 months after it had been on sale. So other people all over the world had got a copy before I actually saw my first. Yeah.
Oh, that you pour your heart and soul into something like that.
Yeah.
The world sees it before you. That hurts.
Yeah, it was tough. But anyway, it was beautiful. Anything would have been beautiful at that stage, you know.
yeah, so
it was.
True.
It was lovely, yeah.
When we last talked, that project was on the horizon. Like you were getting ready to go to England to begin the process. Tell the story of how that all came about and what you went through to make this happen.
Yeah, so obviously I explained to you how I had moved from one publisher to another, and this was my first commission, was would I like to do a book for Kew Gardens. They have this library of about 200,000 or more botanical paintings. So to start with, they sent me a digital library with all these paintings and said, choose what you want and then let us know, you know, just check with us that it's okay to use it. So that took months, literally months. I just made a Pinterest board, and everything I liked I put on the board, and then I whittled it down. It was very, very difficult. And I had some friends that used to come on, we'd have a sort of weekly Friday group, and each time they came, I'd put these up on the TV and they'd say, that one, that one, that one. The next time they came, I'd say, no, changed it. We're starting again. Anyway, finally, you know, found it. And I did have a contact at Kew who in the library. So quite often I would just, because while you're working on the book, you also start to think, no, I don't think I want to use that. I'm feeling like I need something with blue, or I try to have a good mix of colors as well as flowers. So it's not just about the flowers. You don't want a whole book full of pink flowers. You know, you want a bit of purple and a bit of pink. And anyway, she at one stage she said to me, "Have you had a look at these Japanese paintings? They're very, very old. I think they were 17th century. Honzo Zufu." And she sent me some of these, and so that was it. There was a chrysanthemum and an iris. So something else was discarded, and these were bought in. And this went on for months. And then finally, in the middle of, it would have been 2019, I went over and I met Search Press. I went and spent a morning there and met my editor and met all the staff and saw how everything worked. And then I went and spent a day, well, a morning with Q. So Q is made up of, it's a very diverse place. It's, you know, it's not just the gardens. It's got this huge library and a place where they house all their botanical paintings and specimens. So I got to see all of this. I was in awe, absolute awe. And meet the publishing team, and I was able to chat to them about what happened to the book once it was done. So I was told that it would be in their library forever. So if I move on, the book's there. And also it would be sold in their gift shop. And
yeah. Well, and for people who don't know about Kew and the Royal Botanic Garden, when it comes to botanical specimens, they have the largest collection in the world.
They do. And, they do. Yeah. And obviously, I just saw a few of those.
I can imagine.
And I saw some. it's hard to take it all in, you know, when you're there. I mean, obviously, in an ideal world, it would have been perfect to go over there before I started on the book. But actually, you could never go through all their botanical paintings. So it was probably better that I did it online.
In my research, 200,000 plus botanical prints and illustrations from the 18th century to today. And my first thought when I read that, because I spent way too much time on their website, but my first thought was, from your perspective, to put a book together, just to get your head around the resources, and then to get it down to what do you have, 11 projects in the book from 200,000 plus, whatever access to whatever part of that you had, I can imagine the mental battles that you must have had trying to just sort it out and get down to something that you think would make a good book.
Yeah, many, many sleepless nights. But, you know, in the end, it comes down to what's going to be right for stitching. And not every project, especially some of these antique paintings, were quite busy, you know, too much going on. And as you know, I don't have a lot of busy things going on in my designs. I quite like the shading and the gradations to pop and... Yeah, so it all worked out in the end. I mean, I could do another book just on those botanical paintings, you know. There's so many of them. I think I've got over 2,000 on my Pinterest board just sitting there. And they're all copyright free because of their age.
Yeah, they're just so old. Yeah, you can do what you want with them.
You can do what you want with them. But you know what I also found interesting was learning a bit about the explorers and how these plants were brought into the country from faraway lands, and how they did these botanical paintings as a reference because they didn't have cameras.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And you know, you were saying earlier about the study of the plants. That's what they were trying to do, because they brought back specimens which Q managed to propagate, and that is how we have those flowers to this day. It's because of places like Q.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether you live in the States or South Africa or wherever you live, you can have those plants in your garden. But you couldn't have done it without those explorers.
Yeah. bringing them back, so, and yeah, making the drawings, yeah. Yeah, all the things. Yep.
There was a lot going on, but you know, it's fine. You just zone in and you focus, and I just kept thinking, I've got to make this good. You know, there was a bit of pressure. There was new publishers. It was a very prestigious commission, and I didn't want to mess it up. You know, so I gave my best. Yeah. I did. But that's all you can do. Yeah.
So this was a commission then. They came to you and said, will you do it, do a book?
Yes. Well, they asked Search Press to find someone.
Oh.
And Search Press asked me, said, would you be interested? And I said, yes.
I was going to say, and you said, not never. No, I'm not doing that.
Don't ask anyone else. I am your person.
Lock it down quick. Yep.
Yeah. So, yes, it was a real privilege.
So you go to the gardens there, and I can't even imagine taking in all of what they have to offer.
So much.
Yeah.
So much. So, you know, they have the traditional side, and then they have very modern contemporary sculptures and bee structures, and they have the Shirley Sherwood Botanical Library, which I have met and spoken to Shirley Sherwood in the past, because one of my earlier books, I had used some of her paintings.
Yeah.
So that was amazing to see. And then, of course, there's the Marion North.
Yes.
Which is not my cup of tea, but beautiful paintings, but very, very busy.
Yes.
So I couldn't have used any of those, no.
No, that collection there, I kind of locked in on that just for the pure art of it. Her work is incredible, yeah. But.
And, of course, the Search Press, I have to say a little bit about them, because they are the most incredible publishers, and you being in the publishing world can identify with this. You know, they've won awards. They said it's actually embarrassing. They sort of walk away with the awards every year. but I can see why.
Yes.
They're so accommodating. Nothing's ever too much trouble. You know, if I have an idea in the middle of the night and I run it by my editor, she always comes back and says, Trish, no, great idea, but no, I don't think so, not at this stage. Or you know, she'll always consider it. And sometimes you just think crazy thoughts, you know, and you need someone to sort of bring you back down. and what was the best thing about it was they gave me a freelance editor to check my instructions. So she was separate to everything else. So every time I finished a project and I had done the instructions, I would email them to her. And she was brutal, absolutely brutal. You know, she would come back with red things all over the place. And anyway, but you
a
know,
good editor good, then. All right.
Yes, she
I
want to
meet
good.
Her.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. And she had stitching experience, so she had all the color charts.
Ah.
So I was using all Verisoire and DMC, and she was able to work out by using her charts, if I'd got that right. It's a big thing, you know, because quite often it's hard to combine that, the creativity of the stitching with getting your instructions absolutely correct. Sometimes you forget to write something down, or so she was able to say, Trish, this doesn't make sense. You know, I think you need to look at it. So when the book went to print, I was 99% sure that everything was okay. Whereas normally I'm not, you know, there's always something that will come back to bite you later.
Yeah. I once worked for a guy who, was pretty much clueless, but, could not in his mind understand or separate the writing function from the editing function. And they're two very distinct functions and two very different people, who do them well. And you sounds like you got what should be in place every time. You got a good editor who would not just accept what you produce as the gospel, and would raise you to a new level by doing a good job of editing. And the end result is the comfort level you have when it actually is printed and shipped. You know that it has been gone through thoroughly.
So she was not my editor. My editor, Becky, who did the whole book, she was another editor who just did the projects, did the instructions. So she was a freelance lady, and they paid her so that I could, because quite often what happens, it's happened in the past, is you do the whole book and you do all the instructions. And then 6 months or a year later, they come back at you and they say, right, edits. And you can't remember what you did 6 months ago. You said, I want to do it while it's fresh in my mind.
So
that was great.
Yeah, and any publication takes a team like that to get it right. And that team goes through things at each level of the process. And if it's all done right and everybody does their job, you end up with a good product. And if you don't have that, you end up with something that you're correcting every time you turn around.
Every time it goes into a reprint, you've got to make amendments, and you've got a lot of complaints by email. And it's not fun. It's not fun. No. Right. So it was great working with them. Really, it was. And it made the whole process a lot more enjoyable. And at the end of the day, we've got a lovely book. So there you go.
Well, and it shows, that kind of publishing effort shows on the printed page all the way through. The quality, the consistency in presentation is all there. And, it's what I do every day and have for 40 years. So it, I obviously can recognize it. If I can, I need to quit. But, it's all there and in place, and it makes the experience for the reader just so much more pleasant, and they get so much more out of it when it's done right. And this is,
Gary, have you personally done any of the projects just out of interest, or
no? I just got the book a week ago.
You just looked at. Okay, so and when you look through it, what do you think of the instructions, the way that they've been presented?
Oh, that's what I mean. It's clear. I know exactly where to go and what to do and how to go about it. Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, it's and it's consistent project to project too. I don't have to refigure out what the roadmap is. The presentation, because it's what I do for a living. So the first thing I go through any book, it's like a disease. I really don't see the content as much as I see the presentation. And how it's all shown, and then I go back a second time and actually start to read things. But that's the part I just was so impressed with what they did, and the way that they kept an art element to an instructional book. How that can get lost.
Absolutely. It's what I wanted. And I had a long chat with the graphic designer, and he listened. Mm-hmm. He did listen, because I was so impressed with the way they put those little lines with the little circle at the end. To show. I'm looking at the book now with new eyes. So, and you know, my daughter did the photography, of course.
I want to talk about her. Yeah. But see, the thing is, and when people buy this book, that they'll see it, is you'll have these pages of instruction and arrows and lines and instructions and steps and all those things, and then they'll put in a picture of the art, full page. And so your eye can stop and set aside the instructions and just enjoy the art. And that happens frequently. And to me, that it keeps that in your mind. This is art that we're working on here. We're not just, Lincoln Log, put it together kind of thing. We're creating a piece of art, and here's how it looks. And that is sustained throughout the whole thing. So for me, that it just gives that element that you would not normally get in a project book. And I just really like on the Iris one, where we'll have the whole project, and then on page 126, then we zoom in close. That, you know, it's art.
I'm looking at it now.
Yeah.
Look, I agree, and you know, I can agree because I didn't do that. So, you know, I did the stitching. I mean, the way they've put it together is beautiful. Yeah. I agree.
It's really exceptional publishing. It really is. Now, when you went to Q, had you already identified the 11 projects, or were you still carting around 40 or 50 of them and still trying to decide?
No, I had more or less I had completed the stitching.
Oh, you had?
When I went.
Oh.
So, it's not that easy just to fly from South Africa to London. So it, we try to tie it up with a visit to our children. And I think I started the book in 2017 and I only got to go in 2019. So it was all done and I actually delivered the manuscript. That's what I did.
Oh, that was the trip then.
And I took all the original pictures over so that they could see them, but also maybe if they needed to photograph them again or, you know, for any reason. They're still there. Oh, no, they're not. They've come back. Yeah, they've come back.
Yeah.
Now your
daughter, so you have everything stitched and then ship ahead to your daughter so she can photograph, or was that part of your trip?
No, she came out for Christmas in, I suppose it would have been 2018. I can't really remember. And she was employed by Search Press because she is a photographer. Mm-hmm. She's a graphic designer and photographer. And so they paid her the going rate. And she came to the house and we got a picnic table and some whiteboard. And, you know, she's got this fancy camera. And we went all around the garden trying to find the light, chasing the light. And I was her assistant. Yeah, we had a few arguments.
I wasn't going to ask.
You don't want to know.
I wasn't going to ask.
Yeah.
Two artists. Okay, I can see.
Oh, dear. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, well, I mean, it did take a whole week, you know, getting up every morning, and then she wasn't happy, and then we'd have to start again. And I had to obviously find props, you know, so try and find the exact threads for each project so that they match the project, and needles and hoops and whatever we could find, flowers. It was quite an experience.
Yes, but I can imagine.
Wow. Wow. I mean, it's made the book, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, of course,
It would not be that book without the photography. And the way she captures the light on some of those, you know, the shine.
Yes.
As I said, that shine is not really there, you know, but she gets a shine. So, yes, they've employed her. They actually have asked her to go and do freelance work for them now. They were so impressed. And they've employed her to do the next book as well. So I'm not sure how we're going to manage that one with the current situation, but we'll work it out.
Well, the thing with her photographer, I so admire it because as someone who has done a lot of macro photography, and I've tried doing some needlework, and I can't say I've worked very hard at it, but for me, it has come across as a bunch of threads with, you know, and how little strands, little fuzzy strands here and there. And I could not, in the dabbling that I did, I could not get the right look to make it look like a beautiful stitched piece. Mm-hmm. My eye just kept seeing thread with little pieces of fuzz hanging off. And when I look at these photos, she's captured the art. And yeah, there is that shine there, but she has the light and retains the texture of the thread without it visually getting in the way of the art and the image. And I really admire that. I have to say I've spent enough time studying her photography just to enjoy what she accomplished. So I can tell she has a clue.
She's got a knack. I mean, I can have all the equipment and I will never be able to do what she does. And I suppose that's what it is. It's, you know, some people have the knack of stitching. Some people have the knack of painting, and she has the eye.
Yep. If we're easy, everybody do it, you know?
She stands up on things and looks down and gets into all these awkward positions, but she gets the shot.
Right.
So, yeah.
She does a tremendous job. Yeah, there's no doubt about it. Really beautiful. And brings out, there's a dimension to it. She really, just really admire her effort. Yeah, very nice. Yeah. So did you know early on that you were going to do at, what do you have, 3 or 4 levels? You have a beginner, an intermediate, and advanced. Was that the original plan to offer different levels of project, or did that evolve as you worked on it?
No, I always do that in every book. I try and put myself in people's shoes. Mm-hmm. You know, having bought books in the past myself on embroidery, that if a complete beginner buys a book, they need to be able to start somewhere. You can't have a book that is just for advanced people or just for intermediates. So they have to be able to read the instructions, try them out. So always put in those practice bits, and then have something that they can start on. So a really simple starter project. And then it's a process, you know, and that they can move on. And then the advanced stitcher will just dive straight in. So it generally works. It's just my policy. It's what I do. I think if you look at every single book, has got beginner, intermediate, advanced.
I bring that up specifically for that, because people, you know, if you look at this book and you see that it's a collection from the Kew Gardens, and obviously there's a lot of history behind these pieces, and you think, oh, this is way beyond me. And I own several of your books, and they are all that kind of thing. If you've never done it before, the first how many pages are all instructional for how to do needle painting, what you use, how you put it together, the whole bit. So it's a full instructional set to begin the book before you even get to the project. So anyone who's never done it, if you know how to put a thread through the eye of a needle, you can tackle this thing. And
I have read reviews occasionally on Amazon where people have said, oh, it's just the same. It's the same instructions and the same diagrams or whatever. But you know, there is only one way to skin a cat, really. You know, instructions are instructions. You can't change them each time. You can change the projects. You can maybe change the pictures, but the instructions are the same.
Right.
So those will always be in every single book, because you can't say, well, I presume that everyone has my previous 5 books, so they don't need the instructions. Let's just leave those out. You have to put them in.
Right.
It's something that I struggle with each time I start a new book. I think, you know, as you said, I mean, it's the first, 30 pages or more are full of instructions, and that could be used for an extra project. But you have to put it in. So,
well, you can't force people to buy 2 or 3 previous books to get the instructions. And that's, you know, that's the plus here is I can enjoy this book based on historic illustrations, and I don't have to go and buy 2 others just to learn how to do the techniques. It's all contained right here for me. You know, it's like reading novels about a character where you pick up the latest one and you enjoy it, and now you're, but you don't have any of the background. So now you can go back and buy book one and read them all.
And, yes. So you've got to presume that this is everyone's one and only copy, and that's it. Yeah, So it's also trying to diversify, but I've actually been thinking about that a lot lately. You know, how, what can you put in the next book that will make it slightly different from the previous one? And I've got some ideas.
Well, it's good that you have ideas, because when you run out, then you're in trouble.
I don't think you could ever run out, could you?
Probably not.
My husband says he knows when I get an idea, because he says I'm making my toast in the kitchen. And then the next thing he knows, I've gone, and the toast is still there with the butter, and I've gone up to my studio. And he says, I think Trish just stands there and says, she's buttering her toast, and she says, you know, that would be a really good idea. And then runs up to us. That's exactly what I do. If it's the middle of the night, I send myself an email. I don't know if you do that.
No, that's a good idea, though. I'm going to keep that in mind.
Yeah. You can send yourself a little to-do list, and then you can sleep. You know, you're not thinking about it.
That's so funny that you would describe it that way, because one of my favorite rock guitarists is Joe Walsh. And he's kind of a nut, but a brilliant artist. And one of his most well-known songs is Rocky Mountain Way. And he said And so he tells the story that he was starting a solo career, and he had all the songs done for the album, and he had the instrument track already down for Rocky Mountain Way, but he didn't have one word of lyric. And didn't know, and he was living in Colorado, and he was out mowing the lawn.
He looked up,
and there were the mountains in the back range, and he said all the words just came to him all at once, and he ran into the house to get them down so he wouldn't forget them, but the mower kept going.
I was going to say, did he turn the mower
No, he
off?
Did not. And it mowed down part of the neighbor lady's gardens.
You know, isn't it amazing? Yeah. Isn't it? I think it's fantastic when you hear the story behind things like this.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
I think everyone thinks it just happens. They have no idea what's involved.
Yep.
You know, the worry, the everything that goes on behind creating something, whether it be music or books or embroidery or painting or anything. Yeah.
And when the light goes on, you have to act. Yeah.
Oh, definitely. I'm a doer. I get cross with people who don't put things into action. You know, like my kids, if they say they've got an idea, do it.
Yeah.
But I need to think about it. And I need, you know, you will make mistakes. And believe me, I've made many, many mistakes. And some of them quite expensive, too. But, if you don't do it, you don't know.
Right.
Yeah. I've had some crazy ideas sometimes, you know, really. And things that involve fabric and cupboardfuls of fabric, which I then have to try and sell off quietly while my husband's not watching. Because because at the time I thought, oh, this is a good idea, and it wasn't. But if I hadn't done it, I would know.
Right, exactly, yeah. He must be an expert at rolling his eyes, yeah.
Oh, he really is. Very long-suffering. You know, he sits and watches the rugby, and but especially during lockdown, you don't have many people that you can ask, what do you think of this? So you say, Simon, what do you think of this? And I can see the panic in his eyes, you know, like, what do you want me to say? Well, I'm specifically the colours, and oh, God, you know, panic. It's just anyway, he says, oh, very nice, beautiful. I say, but are you sure? Do you think the reds maybe need a little bit of purple in them or something? And again, the panic, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, he's very good. He's very supportive. And I do have my youngest daughter, who's 19, living at home. And she's very artistic. Wow. She does amazing painting. So she's very good at telling me and very blunt.
I was going to say, and she's young enough to not care. She'd just give you the truth. Yeah.
Just tells me the truth.
Yep.
So, yeah. And she's normally right. I'll argue for a bit and say, oh, but I put so much effort in. She'll say, it's up to you, Mum. I don't like it. You
know. Yay for your effort, but it doesn't work.
Yeah, it doesn't work. It needs to be aesthetically pleasing, she's always saying to me.
Oh.
I say, well, what is that? It needs to be something that people want to put on their wall. Anyway.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, the power of youth, I guess, or something. I don't know what that is, but it's good that you have someone who has an eye for art that you can bounce things off of, because yeah, it'll keep you honest. Yep. Does she do needlework? Is she at all interested? Or she's so tired of you that she doesn't want anything to do with it.
She doesn't. None of them do, really. But I've got three daughters. But the school asked me, her school asked me to go and talk to the art department because they had to include some embroidery into their art exam. It was required by the board. So I went and gave a little chat and showed them how they could use very simple stitches. Obviously, they're not going to learn overnight. Right. And so she did start doing sort of outline stitches. And, oh, my goodness, you know, she could take just a rough sketch and make it look beautiful with just split stitch. It really frustrates me a bit, you know, because she won't take it. It took me years, you know. It keeps you on your toes, Gary, you know, and it's good. It makes you see all aspects of things, you know. Yep. You're not just stuck in this traditional funk, you know. You're trying different things. And
yep. Know. Yeah, the youth will keep you honest. There's no doubt. Yeah.
They do. Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
All right. So what can you tell us about what's next? Not much, I'm sure, but.
I am working on a new book.
Okay. Period. Okay.
it's with Search Press, and I think I can tell you that it's with Q.
Oh, okay.
It's not really a follow-on, but it's another commission from Q, and I'm actually more excited about this one. That's all I can say. I've got lovely artwork to work with, and. So that will probably be released end of 2022, around there. And what else am I doing?
We got more black and white coming.
More black and white coming.
Or monochrome. I'm sorry, monochrome. More monochrome
coming. I'm definitely doing those. At some stage, I will do something with the, what are they? The landscapes.
Yeah, I'm most intrigued by those. Mm. Yeah, those, because when I saw the Marianne North paintings, and then you know, my mind kind of jumped over to your landscape things, because obviously those Marianne North things you can't they're just packed, but my mind jumped over just as I was just going through your stuff and just kind of immersed. I wonder how that would work as a landscape that then you embroider on. I don't know. Yeah.
Yep. Well, I've got a friend who's been doing it for years, Diva Neacook. She prints a whole scene onto fabric, and then she does a bit of this and that with ribbon. She works with ribbon.
Mm-hmm.
So I can tell you now, it is really good fun to stitch because, you know, stitching a sky is very boring. I really don't want to do that, and I'm sure a lot of people don't. You know, anything that's got too much expanse in it, I generally stay clear of.
Right.
I like to move around and have interest, you know, so think, oh, I'm going to do a little pod or a little something. So these landscapes, basically, you are stitching the trees and the house and the flowers around the lake, you know, and doing all the nice bits. And they're all done in different stitches and French knots and different textures. And I really enjoyed stitching them. I really did.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that you did ask me about was that journal. And I think we're probably running out of time, aren't we, Gary?
No. But I'd forgotten about that. Yeah, talk about that journal. That was intriguing to me.
Just briefly, because, you know, that was... I was going to say to you that I know this whole COVID thing's just awful, but however, the lockdown period, I really enjoyed it. I don't know how else to say it. You know, it just gave me time out. I couldn't ship. I had to close down my shop. So I started a journal purely because, like I'd said to you earlier, I wanted to try some different types of stitching. And I thought, well, if I do a page of, I'll just do whatever I feel like, you know, I won't have to tell anyone about it. I'll just do it. So I started creating. While I was doing it, I kept thinking, my little conscience was pricking. I thought, you know, all those people sitting at home would love something like this.
Mm-hmm.
So I realized a lot of people were nervous, and, you know, worried, and probably couldn't really get down to anything too big. So we created this mini journal. So anyway, needless to say, my big journal's shelved. It's in a drawer somewhere. But I did this thing. It was good fun. I put out a new project each week, or people could use their own. And then at some stage, I did a stitch along. Mm-hmm. And honestly, you can do more than one journal.
Yes.
It's a great way to, that got my creative juices going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a neat idea. Yeah. And for people who are wondering, if you go to Trisha's blog, she has instructions and illustrations for how to put it together and what the journal is. And it's a cloth book of stitching, and, you know, put some stuff down, try it, stitch it, put it in the journal and build it up from there. Yeah, it's a great idea.
And it's another way of finishing your work. I mean, it's always a problem with embroiderers is that we don't have enough wall space, you know.
Right.
I also don't like cluttered walls, you know, full of embroidery. So personally, I think, you know, you can put those on the bookshelf, and if someone comes around for tea, you can bore them with your stitching journals. Hey?
It's better than putting a bunch of travel photos up on the TV.
Exactly. So, yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Beats that all to pieces. Yeah.
So that was another thing that we did, you know, which I did find very useful, because I tried out a lot of not new stitches. I mean, I'm not very good with stitches as such. You know, I don't use a lot of different stitches, but sometimes you need a way to make something look the way it looks,
mm-hmm.
and you can't achieve it. And I was able to do that.
Yeah.
So,
it's a good idea. Yeah. People. Yeah. Check that out on Trisha. Well, number one, you need to subscribe to Trisha's mailings and follow her blog anyway, just because it's just fun. But yeah, all the instructions are there for the journal, and it's a really good idea. And yeah,
thank you.
Eventually people run out of wall space. Now what do you do? Well, this is one thing to do with it. Yep.
Keep making journals. Yeah. That's some right. People said they'd made one for each of their daughters for Christmas, or you know, there's lots of things that you can do with them.
Yeah.
One lady did her whole journal in insects because she likes insects.
Oh.
So you could do birds.
Yep.
Or flowers.
Yeah, I know someone who has some projects that you can do on birds and flowers. Yeah, I'll share that name later with you.
Okay, super.
Yeah. Trish, thanks.
Okay, Gary. Yeah,
it was a treat. Appreciate the time, folks. Get the Q book, Embroidered Flowers. You'll enjoy it. If you never stitch a thing out of it, you'll enjoy it. And I dare you to buy it and not stitch something, because There's something in there for everyone. It's beautiful work, beautiful publication, and another one on the way of some sort or other from Q. That's going to be special. Thanks, Trish.
Thank you for having me once again, and we'll see you in 3 years' time.
No, we'll do it sooner than that. Yeah. All right.
Thank you for all your kind words and support. I appreciate it.
Yep. Well, enjoy your work. Enjoy your work. And thanks to everybody for listening.